Most visitors arrive in St. Vincent and the Grenadines chasing postcards, white sand beaches, turquoise waters, luxury yachts slicing through the Grenadine chain. But beneath the tourist gloss lies one of the most radical, resilient, and silenced stories in Caribbean history. This isn't just an island paradise. It's a former stronghold of indigenous rebellion, African defiance, and anti-colonial resistance that nearly rewrote the map of European dominance in the West Indies. How many people know that this was once a sanctuary where escaped African slaves and indigenous Kalinago joined forces to become the Black Caribs? The fierce Garifuna warriors who defied European conquest for over a century. How often do we hear that St. Vincent was never truly colonized by the Spanish? Not because it was ignored, but because it fought back harder than most. The cuisine? Born from survival, not indulgence. The culture? Shaped not just by climate, but by centuries of forced removals, eruptions, both literal and political, and quiet revolutions led by farmers, healers, and drummers. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1. The island that wouldn't bow the map, that lied European maps in the 17th century, often labeled St. Vincent as Euromain, then scratched it out and reprinted the name St. Vincent, named for a Spanish saint the islanders never knew. Cartographers claimed the territory. The islanders never agreed. Here, geography was resistance. Dense rainforest cloaked ridges so steep they broke invaders' ankles. Rivers cut deep trenches through volcanic earth, confusing enemy scouts. From La Soufrière in the north to the coral-kissed bays of the southern Grenadines, this archipelago became a geographic trap for would-be colonizers. St. Vincent was first claimed by the Spanish in 1498, but they never established a colony. Why? Because the island fought back. From the beginning, the Kalinago people, sometimes still called Caribs by outsiders, didn't just resist. They developed guerrilla tactics. They understood the terrain, the tides, and how to disappear into the green without leaving a trace. Oral histories tell of war canoes darting through moonlit waters, entire villages vanishing overnight, and ambushes timed to the beat of rainfall on banana leaves. By the time the French and British made serious attempts in the 1700s, St. Vincent had already developed a reputation among Europeans as the island that bites back. Birth of the Black Caribs. But the real revolution was still coming. On the windward coast of St. Vincent, history shifted when shipwrecked and escaped African slaves found refuge among the Kalinago. These Africans weren't enslaved, not anymore. They intermarried with the indigenous population, creating a new cultural group that came to be known as the Garifuna, or Black Caribs. This wasn't a passive mixing. It was a strategic alliance. Together, they built fortified villages in the hills and cliffs. They developed a hybrid language, part Kalinago, part African dialects. They preserved their own medicinal systems, ceremonial dances, and communal landholding practices, all in defiance of European expectations of civilization. This was an act of rebellion. These were not runaways hiding in the bush. These were a sovereign people defending their homeland. Colonial collision, the Carib Wars. In the mid-18th century, tensions reached a breaking point. Britain and France were both laying claim to St. Vincent, and both had made deals with local elites. But neither had conquered the land. From 1769 to 1797, St. Vincent was the site of two major wars known as the First and Second Carib Wars. But Carib War is a colonial term. To the Garifuna, These were wars of survival. The most prominent resistance leader was Joseph Chatoyer, a Garifuna chief who united factions across the island and even struck alliances with French revolutionaries against the British. Chatoyer didn't just organize warriors. He managed supply chains, led diplomatic negotiations, and ran one of the most advanced forms of resistance in Caribbean history. He was declared a national hero of St. Vincent and the Grenadines in 2002. But in 1795, he was assassinated. When Chatoyer was killed by British forces during the Second Carib War, resistance faltered. In 1797, the British rounded up over 5,000 black Caribs and deported them to the barren island of Balisseau, where hundreds died of disease and starvation. Survivors were shipped even farther, to Roatan off the coast of Honduras, giving rise to the Garifuna diaspora that now stretches from Central America to New York. Today, Balisseau is uninhabited, but its soil still holds the bones of revolutionaries, the British plantation machine. With the Garifuna expelled, the British turned St. Vincent into a sugar-producing colony. Plantations were carved into hillsides. Thousands of Africans were enslaved and forced to grow sugar, cotton, and arrowroot, the latter becoming a unique Vinci export. But even during slavery, cultural resistance flourished. African traditions adapted into shakshak rhythms, masquerade dances, bele drumming, and folk medicine. Women became the keepers of ancestral memory, passing on herbal remedies, birth rituals, and lullabies sung in Creole. A culinary culture rooted in survival emerged. Roasted breadfruit, callaloo stews, smoked fish, and provisions, ground foods like dashen, cassava, and yam that could be hidden from plantation overseers and grown in secret plots called provision grounds. Even saltfish, now a staple of Vinci cuisine, began as rations for enslaved people. But the people transformed it. They added coconut milk, hot pepper, thyme, and callaloo, reclaiming the oppressor's scrap into something nourishing. This is not just food, it is cultural resistance on a plate. Volcanoes and uprisings. La Soufrière, the towering volcano in the north, erupted violently in 1812, 1902, and again in 1979, each time reshaping the land and displacing communities. But in a deeper sense, the volcano mirrors the island's emotional landscape. Dormant fury, eruptions after long silences, rebirth through ash. In the late 1800s and early 1900s, after slavery was abolished, indentured servants from India were brought to the island to work plantations, especially in the southern Grenadines. This further blended the cultural fabric of the region. Yet the colonial system never healed. Access to land, political representation, and economic equity remained under the control of a small elite. In 1935, protest movements erupted across the British Caribbean, and St. Vincent joined the rebellion. Workers demanded fair wages, rights to land, and an end to colonial favoritism. These protests would eventually give rise to new political leadership and greater autonomy. Still, colonial scars run deep. The spiritual tapestry. While Christianity became dominant under colonial rule, older spiritual traditions never fully disappeared. In rural villages like Barrowale, Mesopotamia, and Owia, you'll find traces of Obeah, the Afro-Caribbean spiritual practice rooted in healing, protection, and ancestral communication. Although outlawed during British rule, Obeah practitioners, often women, held quiet power in Vinci society. There are also Catholic saints, venerated alongside African ancestors. Some families still whisper prayers over bush tea, hang protective charms in their windows, or hold wakes that resemble both African drumming ceremonies and Christian vigils. The spiritual life of St. Vincent is layered. It's not about orthodoxy. It's about memory. Memory encoded in rituals, sounds, and silence. The Southern Grenadines, a different world. While St. Vincent is rugged and mountainous, the Southern Grenadines, islands like Biquia, Mustique, Canoan, and Union, tell a different story. Biquia is known for its boat-building tradition and whaling heritage, though controversial today. Mustique is now a luxury retreat for billionaires and royals. But scratch the surface, and you'll still find descendants of enslaved Africans who remember when these islands were sugar hubs and quarantine zones. Locals in the Grenadines speak with a different cadence, eat conch and lambi, queen conch, in peppery broths, and rely on fishing, ferry transport, and small-scale tourism. But inequality is stark. On Mustique, private villas sit atop lands once worked by African slaves, and many locals live in nearby villages with limited access to the wealth just beyond the gates. This is not lost on the people. Conclusion: a living archive. St. Vincent and the Grenadines isn't just an archipelago. It's a living archive of resistance, reinvention, and survival. Its history is carved into the cliffs of Owia, where the sea crashes against volcanic rock. It's sung in calypso tents before carnival. It's tasted in every spoonful of fish broth, felt in the vibrations of bamboo fife bands, and echoed in the funerals that still blend drumming with rosaries. This is not the story of a passive paradise. This is the story of a people who refused to vanish and turned survival into legacy. Chapter 2: Reclaiming the Fire. Food, Identity, and the Fight for Cultural Survival: A People in the Ashes. In April 2021, the La Soufrière volcano erupted once again, spewing ash across St. Vincent and coating homes, crops, and coastlines in a choking grey blanket. Nearly 20,000 people were displaced. Entire villages became ghost towns. But even as the air thickened and crops failed, a truth older than colonization emerged. Vincentians do not run. They rebuild. In shelters, evacuees cooked communal meals with what little they had: cornmeal, plantains, tinned sardines. Grandmothers remembered how their own mothers cooked after the last eruption in 1979. Children learned that food wasn't just sustenance, it was memory, passed hand to mouth. Relief came not just from aid agencies, but from neighbors. Women led soup kitchens. Farmers dug into their own stores to feed families. Musicians played guitar in shelters to keep spirits alive. It was not just a natural disaster. It was a cultural reawakening. Food as resistance. Again, St. Vincent's cuisine is not flashy. It's not curated for Instagram. But it is layered with meaning, and increasingly with purpose. Take breadfruit, brought to the Caribbean by Captain Bligh in the 18th century, to feed enslaved people. Once viewed as slave food, it's now a symbol of national pride. Roasted on open flame, split with a knife, and served with saltfish bull jaw, breadfruit is no longer a reminder of subjugation. It's a reclamation. Vincentians have also returned to the provisions their ancestors used to hide from plantation overseers: cassava, tanya, yam, sweet potato. These root foods nourish the body and tie people to land, and land to legacy. There's arrowroot, too, a starchy tuber historically used for baby food and colonial export. Now, small cooperatives in Owia and Fancy are reviving arrowroot farming, not for profit alone, but to preserve knowledge systems passed down for generations. And don't forget kallaloo, that silky green stew made with dashen leaves, coconut milk, crab or salted meats, and hot pepper. It's not just a dish. It's a microcosm of Caribbean fusion, African, indigenous, European, all boiled into survival. The return of Obeah without apology. Once criminalized under British rule, Obeah, the Caribbean system of spiritual healing and ancestral connection, is making a quiet return. In countryside villages like Sandy Bay and Bayabu, you'll hear whispers of working the science. Herbalists, bone setters, and bush doctors are no longer ashamed to share their knowledge. They blend Catholic prayers with ancestral chants, mix bush teas with psalms. Younger Vincentans, many of whom studied abroad and returned home disillusioned with Western systems, are beginning to explore these traditions not as superstition, but as suppressed science. Workshops on Caribbean herbalism now feature recipes that once had to be shared in secret. Bitter bark for blood sugar, soursop leaves for sleep, lemongrass for anxiety, guinea hen weed for inflammation. These aren't curiosities, they're cures. A university degree may earn respect in town. But in the hills, the woman who knows which leaf eases childbirth gets the final word. Carnival. The mask as protest. Every summer, Vinci Mass explodes onto the streets in a riot of color, steel pan, soca, and feathers. But beneath the glitter and rum lies a deeper current, carnival as political theater. The original masqueraders mocked plantation elites, church authorities, and colonial officials. The whip-wielding Jab-Jab, the cross-dressing Dame Lorraine, the devil-painted revelers, all were acts of defiance, dressed in laughter. Today's carnival still holds that spirit. Costumes critique corruption, lyrics question injustice. In 2023, a local Calypsonian released a track titled Ash and Chains, comparing volcanic ash to the residue of colonialism and chains to ongoing economic control. Tourists might dance for the spectacle. Vincentians dance for survival and satire. And the steel pan, once banned by colonial authorities for inciting rowdy gatherings, is now the national instrument. Bands of teenage players rehearse for weeks in alleyways and community centers, keeping rhythm with resistance. Diaspora and the Double Life St. Vincent and the Grenadines has a population of just over 110,000, but nearly four times as many Vincentians live abroad. Brooklyn, Toronto, London, these are extensions of Kingstown. Diaspora families send remittances, but more than money, they send identity. They recreate Vinci food in foreign kitchens. They teach their children Creole phrases. They argue about whether carnival is better back home. Yet the distance takes a toll. Young Vincentians in the diaspora often live in a cultural limbo. Too Caribbean for the West, too Western for the Caribbean. Social media has become a bridge. On TikTok, Vinci chefs post recipe breakdowns. On YouTube, elders tell folk tales about sukuyants, shapeshifting fireball witches, and jumbies, spirits of the restless dead. WhatsApp groups circulate scanned copies of handwritten spice cake recipes and birth certificates. The diaspora doesn't just long for home, it builds it digitally, spiritually, and sometimes physically. Every Christmas there's a spike in returns. Families flood Argyle International Airport with barrels of clothes, spices, toys, and stories. In return, they take back frozen dashin, cassava flour, and a whisper of salt air. Sacred land, sacred fight. St. Vincent is stunning, but it's also contested. Foreign developers eye the Grenadines for mega yacht marinas. Multinational corporations seek mineral rights. Cruise lines want to privatize beaches. But Vincentians are fighting back, this time with environmental law, indigenous land claims, and community organizing. In Canoan, locals protested the fencing off of ancestral burial grounds by a luxury resort. In Owia, Kalinago descendants are fighting to preserve their coastal territory from erosion, and erosion by tourism. La Soufrière is not just a volcano, it's a protector. It reminds the world that this land is active, geologically and politically. Music, memory, and the echo of drums. You can't talk about Saint Vincent without talking about the music. Beyond carnival, music is how memory is stored. Elders hum spirituals they learned from grandmothers. Folk groups gather for quadrille dances, stomping and clapping in rhythms older than colonization. In recent years, Garifuna drums have returned to community gatherings. Though the Garifuna were exiled in 1797, their rhythms remain. Children now learn the beat patterns that once summoned warriors in the hills. In Baruwali, sea shanties sung by whalers still echo in community festivals. These aren't museum pieces. They're survival songs. Songs to row by. Songs to bury the dead by. Even modern Vinci Soca artists, like Skinny Fabulous and Problem Child, lace their tracks with ancestral echoes using call and response structures, drumming loops, and Creole phrases. It's not nostalgia. It's inheritance. Beyond the beach, what the brochures won't tell you. Most tourism campaigns for St. Vincent and the Grenadines showcase sailing, snorkeling, and beach weddings, and those are beautiful. But that's not the story people remember after they leave. The story is in the roadside vendor who hands you roasted plantain wrapped in banana leaf. It's in the woman who tells you her grandmother was a midwife and her grandfather a cane cutter. It's in the ash-covered altar in a small Pentecostal church where a bush doctor used to heal people before the eruption. It's in the ghost stories children whisper during power cuts, and the fact that no one laughs them off too quickly. It's in the drum, the breadfruit, the whisper, the silence. Conclusion: we still speak St. Vincent, and the Grenadines is not an island you visit. It's an island you listen to. The land still speaks. The volcano still breathes. The sea still remembers the bones of those thrown overboard. And the people, whether they're steaming callaloo in Kingstown or flipping saltfish in Brooklyn, still speak with the rhythm of survival. This is not a culture of ruins. This is a culture of return. St. Vincent doesn't just endure, it insists.